session number 15587, reel 2.
Mr. Boyd, reel 2. I was just asking you about the possibilities of German aircraft catching mosquito PR.
Well, basically the answer must be no, because we, at that time, were the fastest aircraft in the sky. But the danger was, going to or from your target, you should never be shot down. Only possibly by flak, but not by enemy fighters. Provided you kept your eyes well and truly open and all round the aircraft. After all, there were two of you, so between you, you should be able to see any approaching aircraft. But the snag is that when you were over a target, the pilot was required to steer straight and level, and therefore his eyes were on the instruments, and the navigator was in the nose taking photographs. Therefore, there was no lookout. And that is how we came to be shot down while we were over the target. But other than that, no, we should be able to avoid enemy aircraft. The biggest thing was flak.
Can you say something about the actual photography, about the equipment you had and who did it and how it was done?
I can't give any detail. I cannot remember now, except that there was the main camera, which was in the nose of the aircraft, so it necessitated me leaving my seat, crawling into the nose, and laying down, as a bomb aimer would, and taking pictures. They were electronically taken. All you had to do was to guide the pilot over the target and try and keep him there. And in order to start, you merely pressed a button and the rest was electrically done. You could vary the speed. And there were two cameras placed at slight angles so that you... because, you see, this gave then a stereoscopic view, and it meant that the people in the camera section, the photographic section back home, who were interpreting these pictures that you brought back, by using a stereoscopic sight, it brought them into 3D, which was what they were really after. The height at which we flew and the speed we were travelling was essential for them to be able to know exactly what was what, particularly you see with sunshine. The sun threw shadows, and the length of that shadow could be measured, and therefore they could tell the height of a building or whatever. This was most essential when they were searching for the V1 sites later on in the war. Other than that, also there was another camera, a smaller camera. From memory, I think the two I've just mentioned were F21, which means 21-inch focal length. And the one in the side was a 14-inch. But in order to take that, the aircraft had to be tilted in order to get the right direction. Therefore, you couldn't operate them both together. If you did, you wouldn't get what you were aiming for. But sometimes, in order to get a different view of a target, the pilot would take photographs by tilting the aircraft so as to get photographs from this different viewpoint. Other than that, there was little to it. As I say, it was all electronically done. You had learned all you had to do in your schooling days. All you had to do was put it in practice. The big thing was to get yourself over the target at the right height, right speed. The pilot then took over. You had to guide him if necessary, but left or right, as the case may be. And you had to keep your cameras running until you finished the run. Sometimes you had three or four runs over the target, back and forth, which made you a sitting duck for flak, but more often than not, you were okay. Then, of course, you had occasionally to do area photography, not specific target. For instance, in the later days, when we were searching for... V1 sites in the north of France. we would go over there, and perhaps for 20 minutes or more, we'd just fly up and down, keep moving in one direction, slowly moving, so as to cover a large area, searching for the V1 sites. Also, from about early to mid-1943, when they first had inkling of this V1, every time we came home from a trip over the continent, we had to, or in and out for that matter, we had to put our cameras on just before we crossed the coast and for a few miles afterwards. The cameras had to be on. The people in the photographic section would find out where that was, so that if there was anything of interest, they'd be able to pinpoint where it was. And we would have taken it virtually by accident, because that happened to be where we were crossing in or out. But having said that, and then of course, when you landed, you always radio base when you were nearly there. The photographic section were there waiting. Almost before your wheels had stopped running, they were there. They'd opened the side of the aircraft and removed the films from the cameras. They were then taken over to the photographic section, and in a matter of hours, they were being looked at.
Did the photographic section seem to be satisfied with the results of the photography, or did you ever get complaints from them?
No, we didn't get complaints. It so happened that since most of our work was done at, as I say, 30,000 feet, it meant quite often we couldn't go because the Met Office had said there was cloud cover and therefore we couldn't get them. There were also Spitfire photographic reconnaissance units, and because they were smaller, therefore less vulnerable, provided the target was not too far away, in other words just across the channel or something, the Spitfires would be sent in at low level to get what they wanted. For instance, the first shots of Peenemünde were taken by a Spitfire. Now, that was a long way away, but he managed to do it somehow. But basically, the long-range stuff was done by mosquitoes.
What was it like flying the Mosquito? Was it comfortable?
It was glorious. I cannot explain. It was marvellous. I've never flown in a jet in my life, but from an engine-propelled aircraft. I don't really think there could possibly have been a better aircraft than the Mosquito. I'm not alone in saying this. They were a wonderful aircraft. I don't know the percentage, but about 95% wood. And in our case, of course, we had no guns. It was just the aircraft. By having no guns, of course, it made it that much lighter, that much faster. So it was just the aircraft and petrol. Occasionally, if we had to go an extra long way into the heart of Europe, we carry what they call drop tanks on the wings, which gave us an extra perhaps 1,000 miles in total, 500 miles each. So having no guns and no bombs, I can say that I came through the war, and to the best of my knowledge, I didn't kill anybody. Not that I'm sorry about that, but I don't think I did. Other than, you always took off on main tanks. And as soon as you were well and truly airborne, you switched to the drop tanks, if you were carrying them, to get rid of them first, before you went to main tanks. As soon as they were empty, you pressed a button and they dropped. So presumably they hit somebody. German, French, or whoever, I don't know. But that's the only possible way I could have hurt anybody.
Do you remember, after the first operation and the one in which you were shot down, do you remember any of the others in detail that stick out in your mind?
Yes, I suppose the one I liked best anyway was... we knew that we couldn't get back. We were going so far that it meant we had to land away. And the plan was to land at this, I think it was called Bolitzo, but I cannot be sure of that. Anyway, it was on Sicily. We were to take photographs of oil wells in Silesia and Wiener Neustadt, where there were a large number of aircraft factories near Vienna, which meant that we couldn't possibly get back. So we took these photographs and we went down the Adriatic, landed on Sicily. We were supposed to land at this airfield, which I think was Bolitzo, but when we got there, it had been so bombed that we couldn't possibly land. And it so happened to coincide with the day that the Germans were kicked off the eastern end of Sicily. And all we wanted there was some petrol, because our aim was to go to North Africa. But because they were otherwise engaged, the Americans really weren't listening. But eventually we did manage to get sufficient petrol to fly across to Tripoli, a place called La Massa, I think it was. And we were there overnight, and we then took off the next day, flew west along the north coast of Africa, over the Atlas Mountains, which was quite something. And we weren't photographing then. And we landed in Gibraltar. That's a hair-raising thing, because the landing strip at Malta, at any rate in those days, you only had a limited amount of airstrip.
At Gibraltar?
Gibraltar, what did I say, Malta?
You said Malta.
It's Gibraltar. Mm. You only had a limited amount of airstrip to land on, and of course the mosquito, being so fast, came in at something over 100 miles an hour. And if you didn't pull up in time, you were off the edge into the sea. So it was quite hair-raising. Anyway, we made it. And from there, the next day, we flew back over Spain and Portugal, over the Channel Islands, which I photographed, and we landed at base. And that was quite an experience.
Were you allowed to fly over neutral countries like Portugal and Spain?
No.
But you did.
Yes.
Was this trip to Silesia and Vienna Neustadt the longest trip that you did?
Oh, yes. We had a similar one where, instead of going to Sicily and North Africa, we landed. By that time, the Allies were well and truly into Italy, and we landed. Oh dear, I can't remember the name. We landed anyway in North Italy, North Eastern Italy. Stayed there overnight and flew back again, almost retracing our steps next day, again taking further photographs on the return trip. The actual targets on that particular exercise, they escaped me. I don't remember, but they were well into Germany and Austria, and it meant that we couldn't have got back even with drop tanks. So it was arranged that we should land there and fly back next day, which we did. So those were the two longest trips I did, because let's face it, the mosquito was capable of staying in the air quite comfortably for 5 hours. And since it was flying at something like 350 miles an hour, which today doesn't sound much, but in those days was, we could cover a lot of ground. And provided we didn't make too big a detour in or out, put the fighters off, then yes, we were quite capable of going well into the heart of Europe and getting back the same day. Bearing in mind, of course, that we didn't always need to get back to Benson. We could land in one of the Kentish airfields, East Kent, on the coast. Manston is one. Can't think of the others offhand.
Were there any aces in the photo reconnaissance work like there were in the fighter and bomber pilots?
From the point of view of the crews, yes, they had their own aces. But from the point of view of the nation, no. Our work was by no means secret, but it was not well known. The fact that when bomber crews went to bomb targets, they always had extensive photographs, and in some cases, from those photographs, they made models, as, for instance, bombing the dams. The models were made from photographs which were taken by PRU. And in many cases, when bomber crews went to bomb targets, again, they had photographs to show them what it would look like, to identify their target. Then, of course, having done the bombing, our job was to go back and get the result of the bombing and bring the photographs back for damage assessment. So, yes, the air crews, the bomber air crews, did have photographs which we had obtained for them.
Who were the aces as far as the PR units were concerned?
Well, again, you couldn't go through the war and say that he was an ace, he was an ace. There were the only aces, if that's the correct word, were those who you were with operating at the time. So that who preceded me or who came after me, I obviously wouldn't know. So I can only mention those who were there. The station commander, there again, I forget his rank. I think it was air commodore. It was either group captain or air commodore. Boothman, who immediately prior to the war, about 1936, I think, had been one of our Schneider Trophy pilots. In those days, a flight lieutenant, I think, Boothman. And he was then either group captain or air commodore, and he was station commandant. Our own squadron commander, again, was someone quite well known. It was Lord Douglas Hamilton, who at that stage was a wing commander. Naturally, as far as the squadron was concerned, the Lord was dropped, and he was known as Dougie to everybody, but he was, in fact, Lord Douglas Hamilton. Malcolm was his Christian name. And the other one that sticks out is Wing Commander John Merrifield. He also took photographs of Peenemunde. He was one of the flight commanders, my flight commander, and he, if really there was a sticky thing to do, John did it. If he then didn't get what was required, then someone else had to go. And on a jocular vein, I do remember at one stage, John Merrifield took off. He had, for some reason, to go to Gibraltar, some official reason. He took off from Benson after having had breakfast. He flew to Gibraltar, conducted whatever business it was he had to do, had lunch, flew back, and he had dinner in the mess again. Now, in those days, that was quite a feat. Today, I suppose it would be almost commonplace, but in those days, it was quite something. So those are the three that I would mention most of all.
Now, you seem to have been on operations about almost exactly 12 months.
Yes.
43 to 44. Apart from the operations you've already mentioned, are there any other operations or incidents that stick out that personally happened to you?
I don't think so. I mean, I mentioned the very first one where we had flak. Of course, subsequent to that, we had flak in many places. We also encountered fighters, but not enough, I don't think, to put down on any recording. It's just part of what happened, and I don't think there was anything exciting or untoward. It so happened that, this is not really answering your question, but it so happened that the day after every operation, we as a crew were allowed to go down to the photographic section, and we each photograph was numbered, and we were allowed to select any six. We'd go through all the photographs to see whether or not our mission had been a success or otherwise, and we were allowed to choose any six photographs, and they would give us copies to keep. Now, it so happens that I don't think any harm can come to me now, but at the time it would have done. You were supposed not to take them off the station. Well, as it happens, I did, and I'm very glad I did, because every time I went on leave, I'd take these photographs home, and they were safely stored at home, which meant that having been shot down, if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have them. I've still got them now, and I value them. So I've now got photographs of probably every operation that I did, except the last one, of course. Also, because of that, I was able to give... My pilot went through them, and he was able to select numbers from my copies, which he then put in and got copies of, which otherwise probably we would never have had. But I don't really think there's anything untoward. I mean, other than that, it was just routine stuff. Mm.
Did you enjoy the work, or what did people have apprehensions and nightmares about going out on operations?
To the best of my knowledge, no one had nightmares. I suppose it would be untrue to say no one had apprehensions. I did, certainly, yes. Bearing in mind that you're unarmed and you're relying on your eyesight and your speed, and sooner or later, as happened to us, the law of averages says that someone's going to get down. So, yes, there was a certain amount of apprehension. But other than that, I'm now speaking at my old age. In those days, even though I was old for the job I was doing, the fact is I was a much younger man, and in those days, a lot of chaps didn't experience fear due to the excitement of it all. Although I suppose in our case, because, as I say, there was just the one aircraft going, you're on your own, it was a little bit more tense, maybe, than if you'd gone as a whole squadron. You're all together and you're all going together. It lessens the feeling, I would think. I don't know. But I cannot speak for the rest of the squadron, but I was never aware of any undue apprehension. No, and I think most of the chaps enjoyed what they were doing.
Did you always go to France and Germany, or were there more unusual countries you photographed?
Well, as I say, basically, because of range, it was France and Germany, mainly Germany, of course. But then there was Silesia, there was, the oil wells in...
Romania?
Romania, yes, that's it. That was one of the places we went to where, as I say, it was so far we couldn't get back again.
I think they were called Ploesti.
Yes. And also, of course, we were B Squadron. A Squadron operated from from Lucas. Dice was the OTU. A Squadron operated from Lucas in Scotland on the east coast. And they operated over Norway, because there was a lot of activity in Norway at that time, particularly naval activity.
Do you mean A and B flight?
No, squadron. A and B flights in the same squadron, yes.
In 540.
Did I say squadron? Yeah. Yes. No, it's 540 squadron, and B flight, which was mine, was at Benson. A flight was at Lucas in Scotland. And they covered, as I say, Norway, maybe Sweden if necessary, but also the fjords when searching for German battleships, etc.
Now, can we go on to the operation on which you were shot down, and can you take me through it step by step in detail as to what happened?
Yes, it's still fairly fixed in my mind. I was in the nose. Oh, first of all, the operation we were doing was, as we referred to it in those days, a piece of cake, because anywhere in France was supposed to be trouble-free. So we went down to the south of France. We were supposed to be taking photographs of airfields and any possible places where airstrips could be laid down, preparing for the invasion of southern France, which, of course, by the time it took place, we were in Germany anyway. But we had about a dozen, I think, targets, airfield targets, to take, plus any terrain that looked flat enough to be made into an airstrip, really, for the invasion of southern France. I think we'd covered about four or five of our targets. And as I had previously explained, when I'm in the nose taking photographs and the pilot is trying to keep straight and level, there's no lookout. And it was on such an occasion as that that we were jumped, as we say, by a dozen Messerschmitts. Now, I've since said that there's no way that they would send up 12 Messerschmitts against a defenseless, one single defenseless Mosquito. So we must have run into them, or they ran into us by accident, realised what we were, and decided to dispose of us. Anyway, half a dozen of this dozen disappeared. They went off and left the others to deal with us. And they split into two threes, and as one lot dived down, the other lot climbed on each port and starboard wing. And then they would come up out of the dive, firing underneath us, and they would come down diving on top of us. And so it went on. But because of our speed, we were able slowly to draw away from them. But it wasn't until I gave the pilot the all clear, okay, they've gone, we then noticed what we thought was fire in the starboard engine. Fortunately, it wasn't fire, but equally unfortunately, it was petrol. They'd hold our petrol tank, and the petrol was just streaming out like smoke. When I looked at the petrol gauge, we had about 2 pence worth of petrol. So it was a question of either bailing out or ditching this up, or belly flopping, as I've already said. I think that's the summing up of how it all occurred. You could say it was our fault for not seeing them, but as I say, since we were both engaged, one on flying the aircraft and one on taking pictures, this is the vulnerable moment in a PRU life. And that's when it happened. But we did get down. As I say, he put it down wonderfully well. We clambered out, and we managed to stop only about 50 yards from a French farmhouse. Now, in the aircraft, you carry this canister, which is cylindrical, almost like a large teacup, with a point on the end, a spike. And because it's a wooden aircraft, you're supposed to ram that into the wing and then run like mad, because it's a 10-second detonator, and that's supposed to blow up and ignite the aircraft. Well, of course, it didn't work. So having done this and run away, and nothing happened, we went back to the aircraft, and I was able to crawl back in, get my parachute, pull it, strew the parachute around. I took out a couple of Veery cartridges. I unscrewed the Veery pistol, which was in the roof of the aircraft, and I fired two Veery cartridges in